Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro, and this week my guest is the CTO of Ruby Receptionist, Catherine Nestor. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are the Chief Technical Officer and the Chief Product Officer for Ruby Receptionist, if I may phrase it this way, a sort of virtual reception service on the internet. You are also an active member of Portland's tech community, where you advocate for more inclusive environments to support women and minorities in the field. And you're also a benefactor of App Camp for Girls. And that's how we got to know each other, through Kelly Gumont.
Yes, that's correct.
She told me you were going to be a spectacular guest, so we'll see.
Yeah, no pressure at all. No pressure at all.
So I want to ask you about your work as a CTO. And I've always been interested in this kind of company out of technical interest for some reason in the technology of how a virtual receptionist, virtual office works. But we'll get into that in the later part of the show. But yeah, okay. The other day you told me about how you had a very interesting background that led up to this and the inspirations from your father and his technical work. Tell me about that.
Sure. So I grew up, my dad's in computers and is a computer engineer from the days of punch cards, which I heard throughout my college education about how difficult it was to learn computer science when you had to order punch cards, which I can only imagine would horrify computer science students today. But I grew up in a household that was full of computer technology from the earliest days, from the very first type of portable computer, which was more like a suitcase and probably 50 pounds.
Yeah, we were thinking that was an Osborne when we talked before.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, although I would say the brand name has faded from memory at this time. So I grew up in an environment just around technology, and in elementary school, I had the opportunity to take a programming class in BASIC and made a little ASCII art move across the screen and loved it. This was on a PET Commodore with a good old actual cassette tape as the data storage. But I took a little bit of a left turn after that, and I didn't share this with you yesterday, but I actually had dreams of becoming a professional ballerina, and I pursued that for a number of years until just about college. And when I realized that my dreams of being a professional ballerina were probably not going to come true, I went back to college and rediscovered my love of computer science. And my dad had two girls and was just thrilled that anyone was interested in the same things he was. And so he
Dads always are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was super lucky. He encouraged me. He never made me think that a career in computer science wasn't a possibility. And I think that was really key for me to keep pursuing it, because at the time I did my undergraduate at UC Berkeley, and I was maybe one of 10 women in computer science out of a class of 350 or 400. So, you know, you really stood out in good ways and bad ways. Every professor knew my name, but which was helpful. But at the same time, too, you definitely didn't see yourself in most of the student body or even in the professors that were there. But having that just unwavering knowledge from my father that this was something I could do and be led me to starting out my career as a programmer for Hewlett-Packard back in Palo Alto. And that's you know, I got started there, and I got really interested while writing software there in the business decisions that were being made, which led me to my next step, which was actually...
Because the HP calculators are famous, legendary.
They are famous, and I have an HP calculator. I still have one of the most famous ones. But no, I was actually working on internal applications to help track and keep apprised of assets that employees had with them throughout their tenure at HP, whether that was computers or cars or card keys, all that kind of stuff. So
one of those valuable HP 35s.
Yes, exactly. I think those go for a lot of money on eBay these days. But I was at HP programming and got really interested in business decisions.
Well, I want to ask you something before we go too much further.
Sure.
For the sake of the listeners, did you run into any kind of formal resistance from other students or professors? Was it like, hey, she's really smart, we love her, let's urge her on? Or was it like, we don't know about her?
From the professors, I generally got encouragement. I never really felt any bias against it. I think I found my way to the pockets of students that I collaborated with on projects who had no problem with me being a woman. And were quite happy to take my smarts and my hard work as part of the project team. I will say there were definitely individuals who made me feel less comfortable. And certainly there was very much a culture of, I don't know how to say it other than sort of, you know,
girl
young men.
Culture. Yeah.
Yeah.
Testosterone poisoning culture.
I don't know how I go that far, but definitely a bit of a boys club attitude. So,
did you develop any techniques to sort of help you survive that?
I think it was finding the right people to collaborate with. That was a big help. They also happened to be fairly big personalities. Some of the people who were less welcoming were oftentimes a little bit quieter. So these sort of bigger personalities provided a little bit of shielding for me, and that helped not have to see all that. So that worked really well. Also, too, I think when people realized they could talk to me about the same things, like we all read Snow Crash and we played Doom in the, you know, I played Doom with everybody else and all of that. And so I think some of that helped to break down the barriers, which was a bit of a coping mechanism. Doom's probably not my favorite game to play, but it was a way to bond with the team that helped make me less, helped me stand out less.
Thanks for sharing that bit. Okay, back to Hewlett Packard.
Oh, yeah. So while I was at Hewlett Packard, that was really the, this was back in 1996, 97. And so the internet was really taking off. And as I got interested in business, I thought to myself, the world's changing. We're becoming much more global. What people can achieve based on this internet is really changing the dynamics of how business will work. So I went to go get my MBA and I went internationally and I went over to England, where I got my master's in business from Oxford, which was a great experience.
Cool. That must have been a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. You know, you truly have those Harry Potter moments at dinners and, you know, in colleges. So it was quite the experience. Really fantastic, too, from just understanding how business worked globally. We had 76 students in the class and I think 25 different countries represented. So you really got quite a international flavor.
We're going to talk about this in the second half of the show, but I'm just curious, is that where you came to appreciate at Oxford how diversity of people can produce diversity of ideas and imagination?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really key insight. I think that's partly what has made me such a fierce advocate for diversity in the workforce, particularly in tech, which tends to be very one note. The types of ideas that came out of the discussions with people from different cultural backgrounds were so far beyond anything myself and a bunch of Americans together could have thought up. And that for me was a real eye-opener that you spend a lot of time in companies, you know, going off-site to think out of the box, and I'm using air quotes, you know, to brainstorm crazy ideas. The reason you do that is because so many people that you work with look like you and have the same perspective that you do, and so you really have to force yourself to see things from a different perspective. It's a whole lot easier if you have a lot of people with diverse backgrounds who have a different perspective to get that type of ideation and that out-of-the-box thinking, because everybody is coming at it from a different perspective. So I, both from just a, this generates better ideas, this drives the business forward, and it's just, it makes you better about thinking about how you approach things when you've got diversity in the organization, whether that's gender, whether that's color, whether that's background, whatever it is, it has really big benefits in ROI. And so not only is it a good thing to do, you know, particularly being supportive of women in tech, but it's actually good for the business. And yeah, that was definitely a very real case study to go through to see that and how that happened.
You shared with me that you worked with Ancestry.com. What was it that attracted you to that company?
Well, as much as I love technology, I'm a very soft-hearted person, I suppose. And so I love the thought of companies that do something to connect people to either who they are or to other people in a way that's meaningful. And so with Ancestry, I just thought it was such a fascinating value proposition in terms of helping people discover who they are and in some ways making the world a little bit smaller by understanding that, oh, actually you share heritage over here or over there with somebody else. But then also from a pure technical standpoint, Ancestry is a fascinating problem in vertical search. It is such a different algorithm and thought process and technical problem to deal with vertical search than it is with broad search like Google, because you're not just searching for any, you know, John Smith, you're looking for your John Smith. And so it definitely is a different technical problem. There's a lot of creative thinking that you have to do around it. And I loved the problems we were solving, but also what value we were delivering to our customers and helping them find out who they were and helping them feel more connected to their family and to the world at large.
That was probably the perfect training for what came next, because next on the list is your involvement with Ruby Receptionists.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's another opportunity to sort of, you know, understand relationships and people and communication. Yeah. So did you join Ruby Receptionists as the CTO, or did you join when they were early on and you kind of grew with the company? Tell me about what Ruby Receptionist does, and then tell me how you got involved.
Sure. So Ruby Receptionist is a virtual receptionist company. So we answer the phones 100% live for small businesses all across North America. We have about 7,600 customers, and we have two receptionist centers here in Portland. And our mission is to preserve and perpetuate real meaningful connections. And what that does for a small business owner is we make great first impressions for them when they have customers, you know, kind of going down the list, trying to find an attorney or a roofer or, you know, a real estate agent. They call, they hear us answering in a warm, professional, friendly manner, making a great first impression for that small business, and it helps them win business. So it's a pretty neat value proposition that we reward heavily internally on making those connections and helping both our small businesses grow, but helping our small business owners feel like they have another employee here working on their behalf. So that's what Ruby does, and it's been going for 15 years. I joined 3 years ago after the organization took a investment from a private equity firm that was focused on growth and really helping the organization accelerate a bit of its growth and the value proposition that they were building. So I was hired on as the VP of product, and when I joined, Ruby had sort of three developers and kind of someone who did some project management, maybe QA, but nothing formal, and yet there's a lot of proprietary technology that we use to be able to deliver the service that we deliver at such a highly customized experience and yet still do that at scale. And so over the last 3 years, the first 2 years, I spent starting to rebuild some of the customer-facing technology as well as building the organization that we needed to deliver the product roadmap, the mobile app, and the enhancements we needed to make to the proprietary system. And after the first year, they had moved engineering so that we had the whole product lifecycle in one organization, and that reported to me. And then after the second year, they promoted me to the Chief Product and Technology Officer, because I've really been driving forward this change for Ruby to really take the technology that had been behind the scenes and make it really core to the value proposition that we're delivering to our small business owners.
You must have a very special relationship with your regional phone company. Was it Quest? Not Quest, CenturyLink. Maybe.
Yeah. So actually, we deliver our service through Twilio, which is a Bay Area company, and which provides a very rich set of developer APIs that allows us to provision phone numbers anywhere in the U.S. very easily, in fact, instantaneously and programmatically through the application. It also allows us to offer enhanced features for our customers. So, for example, we can provide them a local business business number and then using one of our native apps, either iOS, and I'll just talk about iOS on this podcast, allowing us. There's some other native app, but I don't remember what it's for. But for iOS, with that local business number, our customers can actually use their personal cell phone and make a call, but show that business number as the caller ID. So as a small business owner, they're able to keep their same single cell phone, but keep their personal cell phone number personal and interact with their customers only showing that business number. So all of that's enabled by the Twilio developer environment. And that's actually who we use for the for our telephony delivery.
I'm curious, does this require a massive optical fiber line coming into your building so that you can manage all these phone calls? Or is it managed elsewhere and then redirected to you on the internet?
So we definitely have, we have a metro Ethernet loop between our offices that keeps us on pretty high bandwidth. I don't know exactly how high bandwidth. I'd have to talk to Keith, our SVP of network and telephony. Yeah, but we actually have very high speed dedicated lines that connect our offices, our three offices. And then we have MPLS circuits over Verizon that connect us back out into Twilio's termination points. So we have two separate lines, one that terminates in San Jose and one that terminates out in Virginia to give us some geo redundancy. And those are, I think, 100 megabit MPLS circuits so that we can make sure that the voice traffic has the quality it deserves for being, you know, phone service.
Geo redundancy, is that a euphemism for, oh, if we get an earthquake in San Francisco, our office survives in Virginia?
Yes, exactly.
Good thinking. You told me the other day about the founder and how the company was originally structured and the financial situation your founder faced and how it led to the design of Ruby Receptionist. That was an interesting story. Let's back up on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the other awesome things about Ruby is it is a female CEO founded and CEO run business. So Jill Nelson is our CEO and the founder. And 15 years ago, she had the idea of in Portland building out some class A, you know, private office, shared office space, sort of like a Regus or an HQ. Today, it's more WeWork type of thing that gets built out. But back then, 15 years ago, people wanted the ability to have an office, a shared place where they could share, you know, front desk services, reception services, admin services, and she thought this was a great idea, but she had no business background and really no money to put against it and could not find a landlord that was willing to build out the space. So she looked at what she did have, what resources she had. She said, well, what seems to be resonating the most when I talk to these small business owners? And it was really the somebody to answer the phone for them on their behalf so that they weren't torn from doing the business of doing their business. Like if you're a real estate agent being out showing a house, or if you're a roofer being on the roof, actually building the roof, versus the, oh, I have to grow my business and get new business and talk to potential new customers. So they really saw a lot of value in having someone else answer the phones, help screen those calls, transfer the most important ones to them. And so she pivoted her idea to this virtual receptionist space and got that into place. Pretty scrappy. She actually had about $17,000 and got a small business loan and, you know, started the organization. And it's been growing almost 30% year over year since then.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, yeah. It's time for a break. In the second segment, I want to ask you more about Ruby Receptionist, the technology, and some of the ways it works in the iOS app and stuff like that. But first, we have to take a short break. Folks, I'm chatting with the CTO of Ruby Receptionist, Catherine Nestor, and we will be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you. And I'm chatting with Catherine Nestor, Ruby Receptionist, CTO. So tell me, are you one of the first or the first service like this that was available on the internet?
So I think there have historically been a lot of folks that are answering services, and what they do is really act as a human being playing the role of a voicemail system. So all they do is take a message. They don't do any screening. They don't really gather specific information, and they really don't do the warm transfer to you of the calls that are important. So
warm transfer. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it is one of my favorite parts of our service because I use it heavily. So our receptionists will screen and they will get the name of the person calling and what it's regarding. And then they call me and I know it's safe to take the call because it says Ruby Receptionist. Mm-hmm. And then they can say to me, you know, oh, I've got Bob Smith who says he wants to talk to you about your printing supplies. And I can say, oh, that sounds like a solicitor. Would you mind taking a message? And they handle it, which is so wonderful. So...
All right.
So that's part of what, you know, differentiates what we do versus a traditional answering service. And right. I think Ruby was one of the very first in this space to really look at it more as a receptionist service and as a real second hand to the small business owner.
I'm intrigued by how this technology works. And the first time I talked to you, I had a pretty good guess. But for the listeners, tell the listeners how this system works in terms of what the person who answers the phone sees on the display and how it gets there.
Yeah, sure. So when a call comes into our system, it looks up the number that's being called in a database. It's actually a SQL database behind the scenes. And that then pulls a bunch of information about that customer's profile. That includes their customized greeting, so how they want their calls answered. It includes the directory of employees that they have working for them. It also includes how
So right away, when the call comes in, even before the call is answered, the SQL database calls up the database entry about how the company would like to have its phone answered. And so the receptionist is reading that at the screen at the moment she picks up or he picks up and answers the call. Cool.
Yep, that's exactly it. And so as the call comes in, that all the information is scraped out of the database and presented to the receptionist on a screen. The receptionist has a moment to read and orient themselves. They can even listen to an audio whisper of the company's greeting. So in case there's any words they're not familiar with or names they don't know how to pronounce, they can hear how to pronounce it. Then they pick up the call right from that system, and then they can continue to navigate through that screen to see how they should route that particular call, what information they should take, and how each individual wants their calls handled. And that call handling piece is what we've then integrated into the customer-facing technology, which is the mobile app. And so the mobile app itself actually integrates with the device calendar on the mobile app and the device contact. So as a customer of Ruby, I can call up my calendar of meetings for the day and set different types of call handling depending on what's happening in my day from that meeting, from those meeting invites, or I can, you know, hit one button and just say, hold my calls. If I forgot I was giving a podcast interview and I don't want to take any calls right now, I can just hit that button and have my calls
held. I can see the possibilities right now. Yeah. If this person calls, I'm in Jamaica.
Yeah, exactly.
If that person calls, put it straight through. Yes.
Yep.
Does the receptionist have a list of the principals of the company on the display and then employee lookup? Of course, you mentioned that most of the companies that work with you have fewer than 10 or fewer employees, 80%. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, it's about 80%.
So it's not too hard to put all the employees on that screen and then click on the one that you're trying to contact. Huh?
Yep. That's exactly how it works. And we do have some companies with much longer directories of employees, and they scroll through them. There's some sorting they can do. We're building in better functionality for searching into the app, right? Or into that pop that shows up for the receptionist. But that's exactly how it works. I am impressed that you figured this all out.
That's how I would do it. That's all. So for the geek listeners, Tell me how this system is structured. You have a MySQL database running on a server, and the software is written in, you said, C#?
Yeah, so
oh, how sad. let's all boot Catherine here now.
No, let's not do that. So our system's defense and credit, this we are still running on the application that was built probably 7 years ago. And so it is a SQL Server .NET C# system for the receptionist. For the customer-facing technology, the apps are native, obviously. That's all done with web services and microservices. Same thing with the website. While it's still C# for the microservice piece in the back end right now, it's a Angular, JS website with modern styling and SAS and all those good things.
Not to be fair, that was designed long before you arrived.
That is true. And so, it has worked very well for us, and it's given us the performance we've needed, but we are in the process right now of, it's time for its evolution. So we're working on that and also on some really cool enhancements. And it is becoming more of a web-based application instead of a desktop application. We're exploring MongoDB for a lot of the back-end database for the data that we have to serve, as well as new programming languages like Go to facilitate faster development and deployment for all of that. So we're moving off C# a bit. Still have some of that in the background because that's, we've got a lot of C# talent on the team, but definitely stretching everybody to learn some new areas as well.
Yeah, any programming language can do anything. And if you're an expert in that language, you can make just about anything happen.
That is true.
So, and obviously you have made great things happen very well. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Did we cover everything the iOS app can do that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. I would say the other piece that I didn't talk about, it's really the way you interact with the Ruby service. So that's where you get notifications for missed calls, messages, and voicemails. You can see the detailed notes and information that a receptionist gathered. You can add callers to your device contacts, and you can pull from your device contacts and add those to Ruby so that when that person calls again, we know you know them. We know we can be more familiar with them, and we get the right spelling of their name. I can tell you that the way John Martello was spelled was not how you spell it, because a receptionist did their best job on how it might be spelled. So I can add you to my contacts, and next time you call, it's spelled perfectly. So there's a lot you can do. You can do the calling out, and you can even turn Ruby service on and off, if you will. So you can decide to have all your calls from your business number go straight to you on your cell phone or your desk phone and only roll over to Ruby if you're unable to take them. So a lot of power in the hands of our customers to really get the most value out of the service and to manage their contacts with their customers and their potential new customers.
Can I ask you how many clients you have?
Yeah, we have 7,600 in every state in the U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico.
7,600 clients. Wow. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's still room for growth?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we are only scratching the surface of what's out there. We do focus on the very small part of the small business market, the SMB market. And in the U.S., there's some 30 million businesses categorized as small business enterprises or SMBs. But if we get really specific about the verticals that, the industries that we work with well and the size of the organization, there's still about 2.8 million small businesses. So we've got a lot of room for growth, given that we only have 7,600 so far.
I want to ask you a final question for this segment. So if I walk into the Ruby receptionist's office, will I be greeted by a person?
You absolutely will. So while Ruby answers, our phones are all answered. If you try and call me, you're going to hear a Ruby receptionist. But we so strongly believe in the power of first impressions that every office, even our receptionist centers, has front desk staff. And when you walk in, you will be actually, I'm going to get the order wrong, but you will be, we have the saying, which is meet, greet, and treat or seat. And so basically you're greeted when you come in, you're offered coffee or water.
The warm greeting.
Yes, warm greeting. And you're shown to where you can be seated to wait for whoever it is that you're meeting. And that's part of that making a great first impression that is so important.
Doesn't sound a lot like Pearson Specter and Lit, though, unfortunately. That's a TV show. Maybe some of the listeners don't know about Suits. Okay, moving on. So that's the great description of the service, and it sounds technically exciting. You know, it's a kind of thing where if I were a young engineer, I'd go, wow, that'd be a cool technology to work on. That would be fun. That's why I'm so intrigued by how this system works. But
yeah, it is a fun programming problem, and it is definitely a fun environment to work in.
Yeah, but we're starting to run out of time, so we have to move on to the next part of the show. You've been a energetic supporter of women and minorities and in diversification and opportunities in the workplace. Tell me how you got involved in that and what you're currently doing and why.
Yeah, so the first kind of steps I got involved with this was actually through AppCamp. And while it wasn't Kelly, actually, who I met first, it was one of our customers of Ruby, David Sparks, who is also a Mac fanatic.
I've had him on the show. Yeah, I know David.
Yes. Yeah. So David met me at one of the at one of our conferences. I was at a conference representing Ruby, and he said, "You need to meet Jean McDonald, who founded App Camp for Girls in Portland."
I think I've heard this story from David.
And so he put me in touch with Jean, and the first opportunity I got to really participate was at the end of camp. And App Camp for Girls, if your listeners don't know, it's a program for middle school girls to learn how to write a mobile application on iOS in a week as summer camp. And at the end of camp, they have a little, one of those little quizzes, you know, answer these five questions and we'll tell you, you know, what kind of Harry Potter hero you are, or, you know, what kind of woodland creature you are, type of thing. And so they get to do the programming, write the logic, do the art, come up with the content. And at the end of the week, they have a panel of women in tech or in leadership positions that they present their app to, and we ask them questions about it and so forth. It's very softball questions, but it's great fun, and it's so amazing to see what these young campers build in a week, having never programmed before. And at the end of it, they have these great, fun little apps. And so the first year I participated on the panel, and I was so inspired by what Jean was building and what she wanted to do with the organization that Ruby, I got Ruby to support the organization through donation in kind. And we host the app camp now. So they use our spaces over the summer for the Portland camps. And for a week, we have this just amazing group of young want to be, you know, learning to be developers in middle school. And it's so fun to see them around. And for them, it's a great opportunity because Ruby has a lot of women in leadership, and we have 50% of our development organization are women as well. And so it's really good for them to be able to see that representation. And for me, that's something that I've realized is that being able to see yourself in a role, see someone who looks like you in a role, has a huge impact on an individual's desire to pursue that role. And so, so much on self-esteem and just confidence that it's a thing they could do. And so getting involved with App Camp was sort of the first step on that journey for me. And then we have a great organization here called PDX Women in Technology, founded by Megan Bigelow, who's head of customer support. And I'm just blanking on the company name at the moment, but she found a need to connect women in technology in the Portland area and has built a really amazing community group here. And so we've hosted events for them. I've spoken at a couple of their events, and I try to go when I can to just show up and represent so people can see who are getting into the industry, who maybe were told, and I've met many women who are going back to code school now, who were told when they were in college by their family or their friends, oh, you can't, programming's not a thing you should do. Don't go into computer science, go into nursing, go into healthcare. And so now in their sort of mid-20s, when they're free of all of that, all those voices, they're realizing, no, I'm interested in computer science, and I'm going to go back and learn how to do this. And so by being there with my title and my experience and my journey, it's helpful to keep encouraging them. And so I do a lot of one-on-one mentoring that happens, that I, you know, meet people at these events and they ask for mentoring. And that's a lot of what I'm doing these days is outside of work, spending time with women who are getting into computer science or programming or product management or, you know, moving through their career and just looking for someone to bounce ideas off of and who they feel comfortable talking to about their journey.
That's excellent work. It's great to have somebody in your position who mentors young women and sets the example and provides guidance. I've got a Kelly Gamont story that kind of fits in. She was talking to one of her App Camp for Girls graduates. Afterwards, she told a story about she went back to school and there was a computer science club and there was all guys in there. And this young woman walks into the computer science club and the guys are going, well, we're not quite sure about her. We don't know if girls can program. And she says, I just finished writing an iOS app for the iPhone in Swift and it's published and it's for sale on the App Store. What have you guys done?
That's fantastic. I love it.
That's that self-esteem part. So, well, we are
for sure.
We are out of time. I want to thank you for sharing your story and telling us about Ruby Receptionist and your support of women in technology. What a great story. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a delight, and I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun, and I learned a lot about something I've been very interested in, and it's very cool.
Great.
So tell the listeners how they can contact you, if it isn't obvious by now. Maybe Twitter or some other method that you have in mind.
Yeah, so people can find me on LinkedIn. My Twitter handle is kmasinmarynester at twitter.com or at kmnester, not at twitter.com, obviously. So that's a great way to reach out to me and find me on LinkedIn or call Ruby Receptionist and ask to speak to Catherine Nester.
Of course, of course. And you will get a warm reception.
You absolutely will.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Catherine, thank you for joining me on the show.
Thank you.
Folks, I hope you enjoyed this episode. You've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. We'll see you again next week.